Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on October 2nd, 2020, from James Island. I'm back in the closet. A lot of pillows. It's safe. And just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it, which is every day these days. Now, this podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features news of President Donald Trump and his wife, Melania, contracting COVID-19. Senator Lindsey Graham weighs in on the news. We learn more about absentee and in-person voting from a top election official. We have a lot of economic data to give you and insight on what it means, and also the latest on telemental health services and therapy. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from y'all about your daily life in these uncertain times. You can leave us a 1 to 3 minute long voicemail at 803-563-7169. We love hearing from you guys, so tell us what's happening. Tell us your thoughts on the election right now, what your thoughts are on that debate. Woo! I'm talking about SCO1, of course. And, you know, other thoughts about how things are going, because we want to start including those, specifically your political thoughts, in our Trail Bites. But also, if you want to give us some day-to-day updates, we will put them at the end of the podcast as we get them. You can do that, 803-563-7169. And now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control data. There have been 3,211 deaths, and currently there are 144,366 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of October 2nd at 4 p.m. Currently, there are 679 patients hospitalized with COVID-19. 160 patients are in the intensive care unit, and 95 are ventilated. And Friday was the third day in a row where we are under 300 new daily cases, and it also made the eighth day that we've been under 700 new cases. So some encouraging news there that's positive. Unfortunately, our percent positive rate has still been very stubborn, currently at 15.3%. Now for the news that the entire world is talking about. No, we're not talking about the president's tax returns or the debate. We're talking about how President Donald Trump, the 45th president of the United States, and his wife Melania have tested positive for COVID-19. They are currently quarantining in the White House residence and are experiencing mild symptoms. A tweet announced the news around 1 a.m. on Friday, October 2nd, following the news that Hope Hicks, a White House advisor, had tested positive. Early morning burying the lead there. Other people in the president's orbit have also tested positive, including Notre Dame President John Jenkins and Utah Senator Mike Lee, both of whom attended Amy Coney Barrett's nomination event 6 days prior in the Rose Garden. Now, Barrett has tested negative, as well as former Vice President Joe Biden and his wife Jill. The current Vice President Mike Pence, who would step in if the president becomes incapacitated, has tested negative, as has his wife Karen. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who is third in the line of succession, tested negative Friday morning. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley, who's the president pro tempore of the Senate, is not aware of any exposure to COVID-19 positive people, according to his office. And do you know the next two people in line for succession? Do you? Say it now, because I'm about to say it. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, both of whom are currently testing negative for COVID-19. Now, President Trump is postponing or making virtual all previously scheduled campaign events. And we have some local reaction. Before Senator Lindsey Graham left a campaign event in Myrtle Beach Friday morning, he briefly answered questions from reporters about his conversation with the president that morning. Now, Graham was getting into his car, and I barely got there in time to get this clip.
I meet her again, but she's excited about it. And she says, y'all on schedule? I said, yep. But that's the very first thing he asked me about was the hearings. Asking about the First Lady, said he's doing fine, but we had a really good conversation.
What about the judge herself? I mean, have she told you about how she is doing? Is she exhibiting any symptoms? She was at the White House. She was talking to senators.
No, I don't know. I don't know anything about her condition, her physical condition. But he asked me about the hearings, and I said, we're on track. We're in a good spot. She's going to get confirmed, and we'll start on October the 12th. But he was talking about business. I got to go talk to the Marine Commandant. There's an issue with national security we're going to discuss today, but he was in good mood, very focused on getting Amy Barrett through the Senate. Thank you.
Hey, Senator, do you think he took this seriously enough? You know, he downplayed masks.
All right, folks, so this is the news as we have it as of Friday afternoon at 4 p.m. So, of course, the story will change. Keep up to date with the latest on South Carolina Public Radio, SCETV.org, NPR, the PBS NewsHour, and other trusted news sources as this story continues to unfold. Now, if you're like me, you're a longtime listener of this podcast, and you're aware of the judicial back and forth over absentee voting in the state. Currently, you do not need a witness signature on your absentee mail-in ballot. Now, this is according to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals decision this week. While that's now being appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, and a decision is expected quickly, State Election Commission spokesman Chris Whitmire gave me the latest on This Week in South Carolina about what you need to know about voting ahead of and on November 3rd.
It has been a bit confusing. Never good to have changes of the rules this close to Election Day, just over a month away. The law currently is that a witness signature is not required. Of course, this was an order by the district court earlier this month. Our board voted after that order to seek an appeal. And that direction to the attorneys that are handling this is still in effect. So the appeal is going forward. We hope to have some resolution of the matter fairly quickly. Our understanding is that, that could happen in the coming days, and that will be a good thing. And so I think what voters need to know right now about it is that the witness signature is not required. That bottom line, it is an ongoing court case. It's possible that things could change. That raises that question of, well, what if I sent mine in without it and then it changes? Or what if I send it in now and it changes? And so, what we say about that is, our motto is every vote matters, every vote counts. And, our intention is to count ballots that were cast legally when this requirement was not in effect. And that's our intention to do that, unless we were ordered by some authority not to do so. And that's just kind of hard to me to imagine that happening. So, if you can't get a witness signature, go ahead and send in your mail-in ballot without it. If you want to take all the guesswork out of this whole controversy, you can go ahead and get the witness signature. It certainly doesn't harm anything. And I think what people need to know about that is that it can be anybody, literally any other person. There's no age requirement. It doesn't have to be a registered voter. Literally any other person that sees you sign the voter's oath, they would sign, put their address on there. Mm-hmm. And the one other thing that I want to make sure everybody understands about it is that there is no controversy about the voter signing the voter's oath. So everybody has to sign that voter's oath on the envelope. And all of this is on the envelope on the ballot return.
Mm-hmm. And then, Chris, when we're talking about, possibly getting anyone to sign this witness signature, what is the point of this witness signature when we get down to it? I've been hearing that it doesn't even really do anything to combat fraud, which is, again, not even something that we've seen in any widespread numbers.
That's right. So this story really goes back prior to the pandemic. County election officials for a long time have been asking legislators to remove the witness signature from the envelope because it really does nothing to help them verify that that the voter signed the voter's oath. Like I said, it could be any other person, so it's not like they can look this person up in the voter registration system. They can't compare their signature to anything on file. It literally is just they're just looking for a mark on that in that line and an address underneath. So they saw, even prior to all of this controversy in the pandemic, they saw, voters' ballots not being counted in election after election for no other reason than this missing witness signature. Somebody just forgot to do it or thought they didn't have to, whatever the reason. The law said they couldn't count their ballots. So county election officials were saying, hey, we really ought to remove this. This doesn't do anything for us. And so you move forward, the pandemic starts, the State Election Commission, we said, hey, our executive director wrote the General Assembly and said, with another laundry list of things that we could do to help elections during the pandemic, and one of them was, hey, county election officials don't want this thing anyway. We could remove it, and that might help some people not have to come in contact with other people in the pandemic. Now, with all that said, I'll add this to this subject, too, is that, you know, we're not law enforcement. We have no investigative authority. We have no prosecution authority. So we wouldn't be out using this information to investigate voter fraud. So whether this would be helpful to an investigator, law enforcement investigator, a prosecutor in investigating potential voter fraud, I really can't speak to that. That would be more of a law enforcement question. But for us, for election officials, it really doesn't do anything for us.
Yeah, and it sounds like it does more harm than good because you're throwing away ballots, it sounds like, at the county level in some circumstances without this signature. So why fight it, I guess? What's the point behind fighting it if it doesn't serve really any purpose?
So the State Election Commission Board voted to seek the appeal, and the chair, in making his vote, noted that said the appeal is happening anyway. There are other defendants. The appeal is happening anyway, and I would rather have a seat at the table. And that's really the only insight I can give on why the board voted for the appeal. That's where we're at.
Chris, what's Election Day going to look like? How safe, how ready are you guys? Are we going to see consolidated precincts again? Are we going to see fewer precincts? Are we going to see lines? What's going to look like on November 3rd?
So we have encouraging word from counties on that we don't see nearly the amount of polling place moves that we saw in June. I've seen a couple, literally a handful throughout the state. Now, that can change as we get closer to Election Day about polling place moves, but nothing like we saw in June. Poll managers, thank you to all the South Carolinians that have stepped up since we really started trying to recruit heavily new poll managers back in April. Mm-hmm. We've had 19,000 new poll manager applications come in. So counties are good right now on poll managers, which is encouraging.
Well, I know that was a bit longer of a section there from TWSC, but it is such important information, and I know y'all wanted to hear it. You can also catch that full interview on youtube.com/South Carolina ETV. You can always tune in Friday nights at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday mornings at 11:30 a.m. I'm always there. Also, how about that good news about the number of poll managers who've applied? That's great to hear. And full disclosure, my dad, Jay Jackson, has applied to be one. We'll see what happens there. Maybe there could be an Election Day selfie. Who knows? And also, Monday is the last day you can register to vote, and that is by mail only. You can find your polling place, a sample ballot, apply for an absentee ballot, and more at scvotes.org. Yeah. Okay, folks, we have a lot of economic data out, so get ready for some numbers. Yay! Andrew, do the numbers. That's my Kai Ryssdal right there. First up, NPR reports that job growth slowed sharply in September as U.S. employers added just 661,000 new workers. The report from the Labor Department is the last snapshot of the job market before the November election, and it comes hours after President Trump and the First Lady tested positive for the coronavirus. Unemployment in September dipped to 7.9% from 8.4% in August. South Carolina's August rate was 6.3%, just for some context. And we'll find out September's rate later this month. And just so you know, the national drop was driven primarily by people leaving the workforce, especially women. For the week ending September 20th, 5,132 South Carolinians filed for initial unemployment insurance benefits. That was up by about 200 people from the week before. Not a good sign. As of September 12th, 94,304 South Carolinians were receiving unemployment benefits. Was that too many numbers? Well, guess what? We got a few more for you, folks. Ooh. Now, this is probably some unsurprising news to you, but gross domestic product data fell in every state in the second quarter to an annual rate of negative 31.4%. South Carolina's annualized GDP between April and June was higher than the national average, and that was at negative 32.6%. Despite these negative numbers, we had some encouraging news from some of the state's top economists this past week during the University of South Carolina's Economic Outlook Forum. Research economist Dr. Joey Von Nessen with the Darla Moore School of Business said the state has recovered about 62% of the jobs it lost during March and April, which is better than the U.S. as a whole. Here's Von Nessen explaining more.
We can compare that to the Great Recession, where, as Dr. Woodward showed earlier, it took us in South Carolina about 5 years to recover 100% of the jobs that we lost in the aftermath of the financial crisis of 2008. So the duration overall looks to be very different. It's shaping up to be very different from what we've seen previously, and certainly in the Great Recession. So a V-shaped recovery pattern is absolutely what South Carolina has been seeing, at least during the early during the spring and the early part of the summer. However, in more recent months, our recovery pace has also slowed down. So we have transitioned from that V-shaped recovery pattern to more of a U-shaped recovery pattern, which is where we are now. A U-shape defined as more slow and steady growth, as opposed to a more like a rocket ship, right, bouncing up or lifting off from a major decline.
Here are a few things he's going to watch in the short term and why our unemployment rate is a bit optimistic.
First is the changing impacts, as you see here, virtual schooling to the labor force. And how is that impacting the labor force? What we saw in August for the first time since the recovery began back in April was an actual decline in the size of the labor force. So as the economy began recovering, as more people were looking to go back to work, in a normal recovery period, we typically see the labor force rise consistently over time. And that was happening in South Carolina as well. But then it contracted significantly in August. And there's a pretty straightforward reason for that. And that's because kids went back to school. And there are a lot of parents who, because of virtual schooling, are having to stay home in order to monitor their kids and to oversee that. And so that's impacting their ability to work. It's impacting labor productivity. And also it's impacting the size of the labor force. And I mentioned before that the unemployment rate in South Carolina of 6.3%, I think, is a bit overly optimistic. If we were to, if the labor force had remained the same size from July to August, and we calculate the unemployment rate, it would actually be closer to 8%, would be just over 8%. So two-thirds of that unemployment, or a majority of the unemployment reduction between July and August, was a result of that decline in the labor force. We also, of course, are monitoring possible increases in COVID cases. I won't spend too much time on this. This just exacerbates the uncertainty that Dr. Woodward has talked about already, and of course, how a potential vaccine could potentially mitigate those effects. And then the additional targeted fiscal stimulus from Congress. What's that going to look like, and when would that actually be put into play?
But what does our recovery look like going into 2021? Von Nessen said manufacturing has largely stabilized, which benefits places like Charleston and the upstate, and so too has retail. But the government sector is taking longer to recover, which means places like the Midlands will recover slower than those manufacturing hubs. Optimistically, we'd be back to full employment by mid-2021. Pessimistically, it'd be more into 2022. Here is some more insight from Von Nessen.
Now, obviously, there's some variation here. We're anticipating that 2021 will be the year of recovery, where we'll evaluate and really see what long-run growth rate comes into play. But I'm fairly optimistic in the sense that right now, even if we look at the worst-case scenario in terms of what our projected recovery looks like, in terms of from an employment perspective, it still looks to be significantly faster recovery than what we experienced in the aftermath of the Great Recession. Again, December 2022, obviously a long way away. A lot could happen between now and then. And that is nevertheless a very significant period to get back to these employment levels we were at February and March. But keeping it in broader perspective, it's still much faster than what we saw in the aftermath of 2008 as part of the Great Recession.
I know that was a lot, folks. Don't you feel like you had a little economics class right there? I know I did, because I didn't do so hot in macroeconomics in college. But that's not the story of this week's podcast. You can't find those grades anywhere. But to bury the lead of the biggest business news of the week, which is that Boeing will officially be consolidating all 787 Dreamliner production into its North Charleston campus. The company said the program will consolidate from Everett, Washington into North Charleston in mid-2021, when production rates will be 6 planes a month. The company said the decision comes after an in-depth study of producing the wide-body plane at one location, and it's strategically taking action to preserve liquidity amid the global travel downturn, a trend that will take years to recover. Now for a quick medical section, guys. No doubt you've had some mental health challenges over the past few months. That's completely understandable. We are all there with you. It's normal to feel anxiety and depression during these challenging times. But one silver lining of this horrible pandemic has been the increase in availability and use of telemental health services in therapy. And that's what Bobby Connor recently spoke about with Dr. Christopher Pellick, a professor of psychiatry and the medical director of telepsychiatry at MUSC.
Dr. Pellick, what has changed in recent months during this pandemic regarding mental health services available via telehealth?
During the pandemic, more and more patients have turned to telehealth for their mental health care. This includes typical medication management visits as well as psychotherapy.
And what sorts of equipment are specifically needed on both ends for the patient and the care provider?
While patients or providers may use fancy electronic equipment, most only need a laptop or cell phone to communicate for the visit.
What mental health conditions or issues are actually being addressed now via telemental health?
Just about any psychiatric condition can be assessed and treated over telehealth. This can range from ADHD, depression, bipolar disorder, and even certain types of psychosis.
And is this true for adults and children who need telemental health?
Telehealth can be used for both children and adults. And in fact, in children and adolescents, telehealth can be a great solution to address psychiatric problems, even at school and during the school day.
Dr. Pellick, does it seem like more and more people during this pandemic are seeking mental health help with telehealth?
Early in the pandemic, it appeared like less patients were actually being seen due to social distancing and other limitations. However, after a few months, more and more patients were seeking care via telehealth.
And I understand there were also some changes in insurance coverage to make it easier to get telemental health.
There have been sweeping changes with regard to insurance reimbursement for telehealth. Prior to the pandemic, patients were not able to submit counseling or group therapy sessions for reimbursement for telehealth. However, with the pandemic, insurance companies are reimbursing both counseling as well as medication management sessions for most conditions.
You mentioned anxiety and a bunch of other mental health issues, and we can guess that with a pandemic underway and all the stresses going on, that people really need a lot of extra help. What are you seeing in those areas of mental health right now as far as treatment?
During the pandemic, we've seen a sharp rise in both anxiety as well as depressive disorders due to isolation, social distancing, and all the socioeconomic factors that have been happening during the last several months. And now with telehealth, we have the ability to reach patients in their home in all communities. We are hopeful that as patients become more and more familiar with telehealth and comfortable with the technologies, that they will seek care for many of these psychiatric disorders, which are very treatable.
Thanks, Bobby. You can find those health focus reports and more on SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. Now, this is our wind down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's happening in your world. Todos mundo. I think that's correct. Are you going to work? Are you unemployed? Are you getting tested often? I know I am. Still going negative. I'm stoked. Where are you going? What kind of experiences have you had while being tested? Anyone in your family being directly affected by this? We want to know. Tell us your stories. We're very interested to hear about this because it's affecting everyone so differently. And you can do so at 803-563-7169. AT, do we have any new callers, voicemails, messages?
Oh, yeah. We've got a new one, and this one is actually new. It's from after our deserved, we earned it, break.
Yeah.
This is from this is from last Saturday. It's Richard, our poli-sci major at USC. So let's roll it.
Yeah, all right.
Hey, guys, it's Richard again, junior political science major, University of South Carolina in Columbia. I'm calling from the National Advocacy Center today because I am on the final few days of my quarantine. I had to quarantine because about 2 weeks ago, Monday, I was sharing a bowl of guacamole with a friend of mine who the very next morning tested positive for COVID-19. So the university, of course, had contact tracers come and contact me and tell me about it. So I had to quarantine and such and got moved to the National Advocacy Center. Just giving y'all a little inside look at how it looks over here. It's actually not that bad. The university's been pretty good on keeping us well-fed. The rooms are very nice. You get a TV, a refrigerator, microwave. They got toiletries and stuff. It's basically like a hotel room, to be honest with you, the National Advocacy Center. It's a very, very fine building. So I'm doing well. Classes are going well. I just finished up most of my exams. Got one more this Wednesday. And, I have not tested positive for coronavirus either, so that's good. I just had to quarantine for suspected exposure. But everything's all right. It's 4:30 right now on Saturday. Got 3 hours till kickoff in the game against Tennessee. Going to be watching tonight. The university even gave us a little one of the rally towels and a ball cap to watch the game with. You know, everything is, they're treating us well over here. Anyway, thank y'all for all y'all's coverage and everything. I look forward every single time whenever I listen to y'all's podcast. I hope y'all are doing well. And I can't wait until we see how this last month in the election goes. As a political science major, this is one of the most exciting times that I've experienced thus far. And I can't wait to see how things are going to turn out on November 3rd. All right. Hope y'all are well and y'all have a good day.
Richard, thanks for calling. We love hearing from you, but stop sharing guacamole.
Holy guacamole, here, Rich. Come on.
Holy guacamole. No, don't share it. And oh, how about that USC comment at the end? Looking back, it's just like, oh, if
sad.
They only knew.
I know. So
but it's
sad.
Great to hear about your quarantine and that you're still negative. Also, it sounds very fancy, and I've always wanted to know what it was like inside that National Advocacy Center there off Pendleton Street on USC's campus. So it just sounds like a nice fancy hotel. It's great to
hopefully
hear.
He's out of there. Hopefully he's out of there by now.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. I'm speaking to him like he's still in there. Richard, hopefully you're okay.
Gavin, we also got a great review on iTunes that we wanted to share, right?
Yes. I
can read it right now.
Right here. Yes. Read it right now, please.
We got a great review on
my internet's crap in here. Everything keeps popping up.
I'm going to read. I will read it. We have quite a delay right here.
Go ahead. Yes, please do.
It is titled, obviously it's 5 stars.
Obviously.
Titled Rockstar Reporting.
Love it.
Here it goes. This is a solid source for SC News. Reporting is deep and well thought out. Sources are valid and purposeful. And the wind down sessions, the best. Love your style of humor. Can't wait to watch you tonight hosting the debate, Gavin. AT, your editing skills are defined. Keep it up, boys. That's from Lori. She's an SC teacher assistant. Lori,
I love it, Lori. Yeah, I had a great time moderating that debate.
Yeah, I mean, Gavin, if you guys listen to our Trail Bite, which you're welcome, third pot of the week.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so spicy.
You and Jamie said that you were caught off guard for how they were both attacking each other. Like you thought one would at least be on the defensive.
AT, you didn't see it, but underneath my shirt, I was wearing pearls, uh-huh. And I was clutching them the entire time.
I bet. I mean, it was hostile up there, man.
It was. It was pretty. I mean, it's just so interesting. You know, we're in this studio down in Beaufort. It's a small studio. It's just us and the crew. There's no audience. You know, it's so different now. So it was tense, you know, at times I felt like there was going to be, you know, someone, you know, walking across the stage to challenge them to a fisticuffs there, but that never happened. But yeah, it was right out of the gate, you know, even in the opening statements, we couldn't even go from the opening statements to the closing statements. Everyone was attacking everyone. There was never there was never one moment where they didn't rebut each other, which went to her detriment, I would say at the end there, like I said in the podcast towards, giving Joe Cunningham the last word there.
You could tell from the start, you were like, okay, well, this is going to be fiery. I get this. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and you put the work into getting the questions right and really getting them pointed so you can really get defined answers. And, you know, that kind of goes out the window. But not as much as, like, the presidential debate.
Ooh,
like, we held them to it a little bit more.
I nailed that.
And they were willing to share more.
I'd like
more,
to point out that I nailed that. I said in the wind down on our Tuesday pod, I was not looking forward to that debate. And I was right. And the world, and we are all the
worst.
You
sounded like my brother. My brother was like, I'm pacing. I'm pacing right now. And I was just like, you were texting me, he was texting me. I'm like, I am all about this. I'm like, this is 2020 on a debate stage in person, folks. Watch it. It's just, whew. Well, I mean, you can use the words that, you know, Jake Tapper and Dana Bash use, but I'm not going to, this is a family program. I'm not going
to
use those
words. We have a lot of children
here
that listen to this podcast, but I've told people.
Yeah, we're not cable news.
I've told
folks.
People, a lot of people who say that it gave them, they were very anxious and they felt uncomfortable. And I was like, that is the feeling of watching an Eagles game. If you're an Eagles fan, if you're a Philly fan, that's what it's like to watch an Eagles game. So if you guys felt that terrible dread deep inside of your gut, that's what it's like to watch the Philadelphia Eagles every Sunday.
And, well, yeah, I mean, I could, as a Redskins fan, I can tell
Redskins,
you that
Washington
easily,
football
that's,
team,
I mean,
Washington football team.
Fan.
But just like in the last episode that you said that you keep up with the Eagles scores just to figure out where my headspace is, my dad has obviously been
listening to the
he's
pod.
Been worried about me listening to the pod, listening to me go apoplectic about Philadelphia sports, and he sent me he overnighted me a box with candy and toum, which is a Lebanese garlic sauce from Allentown, Pennsylvania, and bagels from New Jersey. So like I don't know if he's very worried.
He had to
I don't know if he's very worried about me or what.
He reached out, he asked me a few things, and I said, please, whatever you can do, sir. He's on the he's on the
very kind man. Very, very kind.
He's on the fritz.
I mean,
I can't get him back, Pop.
you also have good news about next week. We're going to bring a guest back, right?
Yes, we're going to have our lead horticulturist, Brenton Fox. We'll be back next week. We're going to shoot for Friday. We're going to be taping on Tuesday.
Yep.
So we'll get you your fall gardening tips. We're going to be wearing comfy clothes and boots and scarves and just getting ready for fall.
No pumpkin spice lattes.
No pumpkin spice lattes yet. I only have one a year. This is VV exclusive for me. You know, it's like limited edition. It's like if the McRib came back. I'd only have it once, which I've never had. Have you had the McRib? I've never had it.
I've eaten one time.
Wait a minute. Full stop. Everyone hold the tape. And you can use my words against me here. AT, you have had a McRib, but and you have not had a Big Mac or a Whopper.
Correct. Yes.
Can you explain? Because I can't form words.
The Big Mac, the Whopper, you could get them all the time. And that first time when I was like a freshman in college, when they brought the McRib back, you know what I mean? I got caught up in the hype, and so I tried it. I felt sick for like 2 days.
Well,
it
that's understandable. It's pressed into
because,
a form.
Yes, it is formed pork. And I think pork is about all you could call it. And there are
pork
fake
product.
Grill lines on it, and it's shaped sort
smells,
of like
I
ribs.
Can smell it.
Like it, yes. If it was like
I think
a
our listeners know what the McRib
gummy bear. It was
looks
disgusting.
Like, yes.
It was.
Did
foul.
You chase it with a Crystal Pepsi? Maybe that was the problem there.
Ooh, Crystal Pepsi. I've seen a video where a guy drinks like a 15-year-old Crystal
do
Pepsi.
Do not do, folks.
And
do
I'll
not.
Just tell you, don't search it. It doesn't end well.
Remember, I sent you that video clip the other day from like I follow all these like 90s Instagram accounts, and it was the commercial of the Coke. When they pop the Coke can and like the dollar bill comes out,
the money would come up. I remember
that. Did
that
ever happen to anyone? Can you please leave us a voicemail if this happened to you?
That was before social media, so you never know. Right now, Gavin,
right? There you would never know.
There's a cockroach climbing up my wall right here.
Stay calm. Oh God,
that's it, dying. Boom, cockroach.
Okay, so
dead.
You'll save the spiders, but you'll kill a poor innocent cockroach.
Cockroaches don't eat other bugs. Spiders are good, guys. If you guys hear it and Caitlin hasn't listened to this and you see my wife, tell her that you know that there are cockroaches in my house. Gavin, take it out.
I had so much more I wanted to say. I also want to know if
it touched my hand.
Yeah, if you've had Crystal Pepsi, if you ever got a Coke can with money in it, and if you've been on Legends of the Hidden Temple, I want to hear from you.
803-563-7169.
Tell him to call. Tell someone to call. I've known one person that's been on it.
He didn't get past the steps of knowledge, and he's still mad about it.
Remember, that was one of our that was one of our original memes. Such a good one.
Yes.
We need some more photoshopping. Anyway, folks, thanks for listening to the pod. We love hearing from you. I know everyone was really stoked about the Trail Bites coming back. We're going to have those every week, especially leading up to November 3rd. And then after that, you know, we'll be off the campaign trail for a little bit. Psych, we're always on the campaign trail. Governor's coming up next, folks. You can show us your appreciation by leaving a review like Lori did on iTunes. Thank you, Lori. Lots of love. Or a voicemail like Richard did. 803-563-7169. We want to hear from you, folks. And stay up to date with the latest news because it's coming in fast and furious, folks. at SCTV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And you can also check out your local newspapers, too. And consider becoming an ETV member. Membership starts at just $40. If you pledge at the $75 level, you get access to PBS Passport and all that great, great programming your donation helps support. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. Gosh, we're living in quite the time. I hope I need to start writing things down for my children. Okay, let's do this so I can get my kidney and morky in order.